Hello, and welcome back to the Video Essay Podcast. I'm your host, Will DiGravio. Today's episode is the latest collaboration between the podcast and the project, The Video Essay, Memories, Ecologies, Bodies, which is funded in part by the Swiss National Science Foundation. The episode features a conversation between Evelyn Kreutzer, who is one of the project's co-leaders and a postdoctoral researcher at USI Lugano, and Libertad Gills, who is also affiliated with the project and a postdoctoral researcher for the future of cinema and the audiovisual arts at the Locarno Film Festival. Today's episode features a conversation between the two on this year's Berlinale, with a specific focus on films that might be considered videographic. Before we get to the Berlin Film Festival, I just want to briefly mention a couple of points about the controversy that surrounded this year's festival. Speaking only for myself here, I joined a statement that was written by alumni of the Berlinale Talents Program. I signed along to the statement, which you can find on Google, the first paragraph of which reads, "As alumni of Berlinale Talents, we call on the Berlinale and the organizers of Berlinale Talents to recognize the genocide that is ongoing in Gaza and to call for an immediate and permanent ceasefire." Again, that is a statement that I signed and that you can find with a quick Google search, and just want to acknowledge my own position as it regards to this year's film festival. There's also been some fantastic coverage of this year's film festival, of course, which I would encourage you to seek out. In particular, I would recommend the film coverage of Film Comment, and also a really fantastic essay written by Devika Girish, kind of summarizing the events of this year's festival, entitled Worlds Apart, Berlinale 2024. Just a really great piece, and again, my own personal recommendation and intervention here. Again, Evelyn Libby allude to this at the beginning of their own conversation. It's a really fantastic discussion about some of the works that they encountered at this year's festival. It's an especially engaging conversation because Evelyn and Libby make the really interesting choice to discuss films that the other person has not seen, which I think is a really great way of letting us and the audience in on their conversation. And I can't wait to track down the films that they mention. Many thanks again to the Memories, Ecologies, Bodies research team for this collaboration. And as always, you can learn more at thevideoessay.com or subscribe to our newsletter, Notes on Videographic Criticism, at thevideoessay.substack.com.
To the Video Essay Podcast. My name is Evelyn Kreutzer, and I'm here with
Libby or Libertad Gills.
Before we get into the conversation, we want to acknowledge that this year's festival was particularly charged with political debates and upheaval, and that there is an ongoing intense discussion in Germany and beyond that is focused on what's happened at Berlinale and or what hasn't happened at Berlinale with regards to the festival's positioning towards what's happening in Gaza. But of course, there were also other political conflicts and topics that were highlighted at the festival. And we paid special attention to films that tackled political issues in a videographic sense. And those are the films that we're here to talk about today. We also specifically picked films that the other person didn't see at the festival. So we're really introducing these films to each other and to all of you today. So Libby, do you want to talk about the film that you picked?
Sure. Thanks, Evelyn. I wanted to tell you about a film that I saw in the Berlinale called Through the Graves, The Wind is Blowing. This is a new film by filmmaker Travis Wilkerson. I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but this film is very much a continuation of the themes and forms that he's been experimenting with and thinking about in his last films, and I think in all of his film work. The film is produced by Creative Agitation, which is a collective with Travis Wilkerson and Aaron Wilkerson. They're very much inspired by the films of Cuban filmmaker Santiago Alvarez. And this movie I wanted to talk about with you today because I think it really is a film that tackles questions about how to make films and questions about storytelling and film form. And he's very transparent and open about the process and the questions and the challenges. So I think it's a film that is very useful also maybe for videographic filmmakers or people thinking about how to use archival materials or how to think about storytelling with different and diverse types of materials and how to put these together and how to position oneself also in front of these materials. So the film is a really interesting answer or proposal for this question of how to make a film specifically in this case about the fall of Yugoslavia when you are a filmmaker from the United States that is only passing through or living for a very short amount of time in Croatia. So he's very transparent about also the kind of impossibility of making such a film or the limitations that would undoubtedly be part of the project. So here there's a question about representation and point of view and positionality, but also more generally about documentary filmmaking and storytelling. And so many sequences in the film are set up as possible resolutions or exercises really to think about this question of about filmmaking, about how do I tell this story? And he includes a spectator in this question that I believe is fundamentally political and aesthetic.
Yeah, so I was wondering, just based on the trailer and on still images that I'd seen of the film, it looks very stylized. It looks like a fiction film almost, and especially that detective character has such an intense presence. So I was wondering how these perhaps stylized or fictional leaning elements would correspond to the use of archival footage or those elements that you would classify videographic. Can you say more about that?
Yeah. Well, that is really part of his style as a filmmaker. So even though he's a documentary filmmaker, fiction is part of, let's say, his toolbox as a filmmaker and how he thinks about storytelling. And I think that's why his work is so interesting to look at and so creative and very unique. Every film that he makes, I think, and this film is not an exception. It really feels like you haven't seen a film like this before. You know, it really feels like a film that the filmmaker has thought hard about how to tell this story in a new way, you know, to make this story interesting for audiences today. And so fiction is part of this, and I think he leans on genre conventions, in particular the detective genre, the true crime type of genre, and then uses that to open a story to the spectator. And in this case, like I said, it's one of the tools, right, that he has. And another one is the use of archival footage. So we have a very, I would say, yeah, intricate, interweaving of these different types of points of view, maybe, on Split, on the city of Split in Croatia. And so we have these more staged sequences with the actor Ivan Perić, who is also a film producer. In fact, he produced Tordesana 37, which was the Croatian candidate for Oscars in 2022, playing this very cool detective who's also a breakdancer and kind of, he's There's more to say about his character, because that is the protagonist of the film in a way, but these are intercut with scenes with the filmmaker, Travis Wilkerson, with his family, introducing himself to the camera, speaking about himself also in the city, and then images of the graffiti-covered walls of Slit in these kind of quick montages to show what is being written on the walls and really also make a statement about that. And then last but not least, also archival footage. So of decisive moments in the country's history as told by popular culture, but also of, for example, breakdancing. There's a breakdancing sequence. And so these images are interwoven and separated into chapters. And it's really, you can see the work. You can see like the filmmaker thinking about how to use these materials, how they comment on one another, how they build on one another, upon one another. So it's videographic because it has this use of archival or pre-existing material and footage. But it's also, there are also other elements of filmmaking at play. And it uses this videographic material to then, I don't know, go deeper into the story of this city, of this country. And fiction is also a part of that.
It sounds like that relationship between those fictional elements in the original footage and then the quote-unquote authentic archival footage or historical footage, that the relationship between those two elements would bring both the fictional elements and the authenticity of historical material into question. Was that your experience, that one layer of the film makes you critically reflect on the other and vice versa?
I think that wasn't the case for me. I think watching this film, I think that the stage, it's more than fiction. I would say there's fiction, there's documentary, and then there's archive, right? But I think that because the like more stage scenes are filmed in Slit today, for me, the counterpoint aspect of the film is more about time. So we have these archival images from the 80s or from the 90s, different moments in Yugoslavian and Croatian history. But then you have these images of Slit today. For example, there's this amazing sequence about the anti-fascist war hero Rada Kankar. I'm probably not pronouncing correctly his name, but the sequence is really one of the most beautiful and I think successful of the film, in the sense that it could be a film itself. This sequence could be a short film and it would work perfectly. And in the sequence, he's telling the story of this anti-fascist war hero who was executed in 1942, and there's a sculpture in Slit commemorating this war hero. And so he films a sculpture, and then to tell us, and he asks, how do I tell you the story of how this man became a sculpture? And that's the question that leads to that sequence. And there, I would have to see it again to remember how archival materials are used in that sequence, but it's more the archival, let's say the documentary, the documentation and the archive is more in perhaps in what he's telling us about this man. And then the images are from present day Slit, of those same streets or same corridors where this real life, you know, story took place. Mm. So I think that the relationship with the archival and the documentary and fiction scenes has more to do with this kind of temporal contrast and looking at the city now in relation to its history. And
looking at the gaps in between.
Yeah, looking at the gaps and the fact that there is a gap, which is that we weren't there when those things happened, or maybe because maybe a question here too is, who is this film for? Is it for the people of Slit or not? I think it is more for an audience from outside Slit. So the question of how do I tell this to you you who maybe wasn't there, you know, and that's also an important gap, I think.
Do you know the sources of archival footage that is being used in the film? Does that become clear, or did you have a chance to look at the credits? What kind of archival films did he use?
No, I would have to look at it again to be able to see in the credits where the sources came from. But a lot of them look like videos from YouTube. And the ones that come to mind. There is also a scene of football players from the national team crying at the stadium during the announcement of Tito's death and in 1980. So, and then we see the stadium today, like their shots from present day. So, yeah, I think these are most likely materials that are available online or on. I would have to see, actually.
Well, if that's the case, that adds yet another archival level to the whole project, right? If it's historical footage, but collected through a contemporary online archive, quote unquote, even if it's just the archive that forms by people uploading footage onto YouTube, and then you have the gap between that and the initial moment of shooting that footage, and then also the original footage that the director shot for this film. So it sounds like there's a lot of layering going on, which is, I think, a quintessentially videographic approach.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Evelyn? What film did you want to highlight from the festival in terms of videographic filmmaking?
Yeah, first of all, I didn't see many films on the program that I think would qualify as videographic, and perhaps I also missed some that didn't sound videographic based on the synopsis and may have been. I think I watched all of those that would fall in that category, and I think the only film that is intuitively full-on videographic from this year's lineup is Alexander Horvat's Henry Fonda for President, which is a three-hour essay film that uses numerous clips of Henry Fonda films to tell a history and a like tongue-in-cheek alternative history of the United States. That's clearly a video essayistic film, no question about it. Then there was Constanza Quadrillo's Il Cassetto Segreto, The Secret Drawer, which is also an essay film about archival footage and about an archive. Overall, it's about the filmmaker's late father and his extensive archive of literature, photographs, films, etc. And the film really centers her attempt to work through this archive, to activate it, and then also to discard it, to pay tribute and also say goodbye to her father. So I could have picked either of those to talk about, but I actually picked one that I think is a little bit more on the margins of what we might call videographic filmmaking, and that is politically very poignant at the moment, and that really centers that has a very particular media aesthetic approach and centers the question of media as communication. It puts that on the forefront. And that's the film Was hast du gestern geträumt, Parajanov? What did you dream last night, Parajanov? By the Iranian filmmaker Faraz Fesharaki, who is based in Berlin. He's a recent graduate from the DFFB Film School in Berlin. And this is his first feature-length film overall. And I believe it premiered at the festival. And I got to see a Q&A with him. He brought his mom from Iran to Berlinale, which was really, really touching to see. And his mom plays an important role in this film. So it's a film that is almost entirely based on screen recordings of Zoom calls that the filmmaker had with his parents back home in Isfahan from Berlin, and also calls with his friend whose name I'm blanking on, and who's also an Iranian expat in Europe. I believe he lives in Vienna or lived in Vienna during those calls. And it looks like he collected these calls, these Zoom, or maybe it was Skype, actually, Skype calls over a period of several years. This friend that he has some of these calls with, he's actually the one who gave the filmmaker his nickname, Paradjanov, and that's what that's the reference in the title. So it's a videographic film in that it's largely based on screen recordings. So it has a very obvious connections to the desktop documentary genre, although he doesn't use screen recordings so much in an investigatory way, like in the way that filmmakers like Kevin Beeley or Chloe Galibellini would have used screen recordings. It's a relatively simple approach. It's all these recordings of his video calls with his family and friends, and it's a very contained set of people and spaces that we encounter. It's him, and we mostly just hear his voice. He doesn't appear on screen very much. It's his parents, who we see a lot, and this friend. It's his apartment in Berlin, his friend's apartment in Vienna. I think his friend is on a train at some point, and then it's his parents' apartment. There's some original footage of spaces both in Iran and Berlin, but it's very limited. So it's a very contained domestic setting. And it immediately made me think of the work of Hamid Nafisi on Accented Cinema, which it's the seminal book from the early 2000s about films that center the experiences of people living in exile or diaspora. And back then, of course, this was before Zoom, Skype, etc., but Nafisi wrote a lot about how media communication technologies are displayed in these kinds of films, and the breakdowns in communication, as well as epistolarity, like all these different, what are the different types of communication that enable us to still be in touch with our loved ones far away, and at the same time, what are the communicational limits that constantly remind us of the distance in between. And then, of course, if you add the political precarity of in this particular context, it makes any kind of breakdowns in technology, it gives those breakdowns in technology an extra level of meaning. And the precarity is highlighted in this film in particular because his mom, who appears on screen a lot, mentions that she was imprisoned in Iran in the past for several years, I think. But we never hear what she was in prison for. And of course, one can assume why that's the case, because it's a public film. And she also now traveled with the film and participates in public events. Someone asked her in the Q&A about her imprisonment, and she said she cannot speak about it in public.
So when you say that it's a film that is marginally videographic, do you mean because of what you said about how it reminds you of a desktop video essay, but it's using the desktop space to do something different than video essays that you've seen in the past? I mean, do you think that it's using the desktop space in a more documentary fashion instead of an essayistic one? And do you think it's doing something that you haven't seen before in cinema?
Yeah, I think it uses the desktop format actually in a more straightforward approach than some desktop documentaries that we would classify as video essays, because it doesn't put different types of footage into conversation in an essayistic way. It doesn't break down the media material itself necessarily. It's more like the desktop as a diary. And in the Q&A, the filmmaker actually talked about how he collected that footage. And while he actually emphasized that there's a lot of manipulation going on in the editing here, that he re-edited conversations a lot so that I think he said that everything that you see and hear in this film is true, and it's also not true because it's put together in a way that that didn't happen exactly as it unfolds on screen. But he recorded all of that by using some software that I would like to know about, actually, some software that just continuously recorded everything that he did on his desktop for weeks, for months, for years, until his hard drive was full and he had to restart. So he says that he and his parents both forgot very quickly during any individual conversation that this was on the record. So in some ways it's a, but of course they agreed to doing it in the first place. So it's perhaps a very authentic diary-like record of his experience. Mm. And he also said that he didn't necessarily foresee this footage becoming a film later on. But then in the edit, he puts it together in more of a narrative and a structured way, of course. I think the aspect of media technology is absolutely at the center of it, which it usually is in desktop documentaries as well, but in a different way. He lets the media technology speak for itself. He shows a lot of, you know, pixelated footage, sound delays, sound and image delays that we all encounter all the time in video calls that often are the result of poor Wi-Fi connections, etc. And that makes the film just visually difficult to watch sometimes. So it's not always visually pleasing. But it constantly reminds you that this is a flattened, reduced version of reality, and it's a reduced version of communication, and that you're missing a lot, which I think is at the heart of this film and at the heart of accented cinema.
Yeah, and that goes back to the Wilkerson film, in a sense that it's like how to tell the story when there's no way that anybody can tell the story completely, right? There is always something that is going to be left out, and that has to do with the positionality of the filmmaker, but it also has to do with when you're filming and what materials you have at your disposal or disposition, and what, in this case, like the technology that you're working with, right? And the limitations or the possibilities that it can offer. But really, they're films that seem interesting to think about in terms of this question of filmmaking and storytelling today.
It's interesting to think that the two films that we've been talking about might be on opposite ends in terms of the personal investment and involvement of the filmmaker, because here, I mean, the film that I'm talking about is as personal as it gets. Family. It's about his family. It's about his home and the pain of being separated from both. And then the film you talked about, the filmmaker doesn't speak the language, yeah. I assume, and is from a different country and has
He's like passing through, right?
He has this typical, prototypical documentary view of the outsider looking in. And yet both of them place themselves in the film to address that quite explicitly.
So Evelyn, does Fejeraki use any other kind of footage in his film, aside from the Skype or Zoom calls?
Yeah, so it's mostly those recordings. Then there's some original footage of, interestingly, particularly of empty spaces, but spaces that and sites and places that mean something to this family, both in Iran and in Berlin, that are associated with memory. The filmmaker writes a letter to his mom about all the things that he has experienced in Berlin that he hasn't told her about, and that's paired with footage of places in Berlin that mean something to him, for example. But that's that only makes up a relatively small portion of screen time. And then there is this third element that I didn't mention before that especially shows up in the beginning and the end of the film. I think it frames the film, which is some like a home movie, grainy VHS video of the filmmaker as a child in his school at some kind of a school performance where all these kids are singing apparently a very patriotic song. And that's another very personal element. It brings the home movie genre into it. It brings family archives and memories into it. And it's a remnant from home. But notably, he doesn't use any archival material from outside of himself and his family. So I'm wondering actually if we're putting these two films together, history and the history of a country is a major theme in both of them. But those two films approach that history very differently and with different kind of material, right? I could see a version of Fisharraki's film where he uses archival footage from Iran, but perhaps he has very good reasons not to do that. So I'm wondering how we might think about videographic, archival, desktop approaches to history in this context. There seems to be an interest in media self-reflexive approaches towards history, the history of a country, the history of a place, of a city. And I'm wondering how we might think about those two films in relation in that regard.
Yeah, they're both examples of what you're saying, and the self-reflexive aspect seems a focus of both films, right? In terms of archives, there is something else that I thought was interesting here, and it's this question about what to do when there is not an archive of something that you are making a film about, or the images are limited. And I think this relates also to the films that we're talking about, because they are using very specific materials in a very kind of precise way, from what I hear in your film as well. And there's another film I saw which is not something we would necessarily call videographic, because there's no use of archival or pre-existing materials in this film, but I did want to mention it. It's a film called True Chronicles of the Bilda Joinville Psychiatric Hospital in the Last Century, when Dr. Franz Fanon was head of the Fifth Ward between 1953 and 1956. The title is very, very long.
That just rolls off the tongue.
Filmmaker Abdennour Zaza, and he was present at the screening, as was the crew, and Franz Fanon's grandson was also there. It was a very, very emotional screening at the Delphi Film Palace. And this film, afterwards in the Q&A, the filmmaker mentioned that even though many, many hospitals in Algeria have been named after Dr. Franz Fanon, there are very few images of him available. So people don't have a very good idea maybe of what he looks like, or how he expressed himself, how he, you know, moved, you know, how he was as a person. And so he was also, that was part of his motivation to make this film. And it's also, like the film by Travis Wilkerson, it's also black and white, and it has this kind of newsreel type of format. It feels like a film maybe shot, you know, in those years. It shows an actor playing Franz Fanon visiting the hospital and observing the practices that are taking place there and making comments about how they could be improved or updated to reflect changes in forms of thinking of psychiatry. And so we see the influence that he has in this particular psychiatric hospital at that time. But I wanted to mention it because I think that it's another example of what cinema can do, and thinking about film not only as entertainment, but a film that can also be a pedagogical tool, and that can provide an image for an image that is lacking or that is missing or that we don't have enough of. So I think this is also a videographic question about what to do when we don't have archival images or pre-existing footage of something that we would like to make a film about or tell someone about. And then here fiction steps in, as with Wilkerson's film, to create this kind of document that doesn't exist in this form.
I think that really ties together all of the films that we've been talking about now, is a longing for something that doesn't exist, that doesn't exist anymore, or that is threatened to exist in the way that it has so far, whether that's a family unit, that's a place, that's a political regime, that's a country. In the film that I was talking about, there's also this strong metaphor of a river in Isfahan that is dried out and that doesn't exist in the same way as it used to, but that might fill one day. And that really, that seems to be quite poignant at this time, not just specific to Berlinale and all of the political conversations that have happened around it, but also, yeah, in our time in general.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. This ends our conversation on the videographic films that we wanted to share with you today. And
we look forward to sharing more viewing tips and conversations with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.